Cause I've got trauma, but so does everyone else. Is it karma if you're only hurting yourself? I guess I need to find a book about how not to try and fix my problems by fixing everyone else. Yeah, it's toxic, but I can't just cancel myself. I need someone to help me look for a self-help book.
Hello. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Good. I'm so glad we're doing this today.
I know. Our second podcast of the day.
Can you believe it? But we're pretending it's not the same day because this is probably going to release on a different day. So we're going to pretend it's a different day. We'll pretend. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I know that we know each other very well, but do you want to do a little introduction of yourself, who you are, what you do, for those who maybe don't know us?
Absolutely. So my name is Shay Atkin, and I am a licensed somatic therapist, and I'll explain what that means later, probably. And I'm also the founding partner of one of the founding partners of Trauma Healing Collective.
Awesome. Thank you. So I'm going to ask you the question that we plan to kind of ask all of our guests that will be coming in the future. But it's kind of an important one because it's kind of our whole thing. And so the question is, in your current role, how do you work to destigmatize trauma?
Yeah, I love this one. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is really just talking about trauma and not pretending that it doesn't exist. I think a lot of times people can not minimize the impact, but minimize the effect that trauma actually plays on a day-to-day basis with people. Yeah. And so after a while, once minimizing, it's kind of like it hurts, but it doesn't hurt as bad because there's this baseline of pain. Mm-hmm. And so I like to destigmatize it by kind of talking about whatever, you know, like I've done a lot of my own personal work. And so I don't have a lot of like emotion attached to a lot of the different parts of my story that are abusive, like whether it be my addiction history or my sexual abuse history or my eating disorder history. I'm able to talk about these things in just in a very like conversational way. And mm-hmm. so it kind of neutralizes it for the other person instead of like, oh my gosh, I have all these huge things. It's like, yeah, they're huge, but we're only as sick as our secrets. And so we keep this stuff bottled inside. A lot of times it becomes a lot more just shame filled and like full of judgment. Like the person just holds so much of that in when then they like talk about it and it's like, oh, to me, obviously it's with the body, you know, and so we do different things with the body and letting them process mm-hmm. the cycles of trauma within the body. And it's not linear, you know, a lot of times there's shame because the person may be 45 years old, but there's this like 6-year-old part that like, you know, really just wants to grab like a blanket and just sit and kind of rock. And that's okay. You know, it's being able to just say, yeah, do that. Like, go for it. Mm-hmm. This doesn't have to look any certain way. And just allowing people to physically be able to do the things that like societally, maybe they feel is taboo or not okay to do. And just saying, this doesn't have to look any certain way. Like,
yeah, I love that.
This is just what it is. Like, let's just mm-hmm. deal with what is, because we're always living in the should be's or the should have's, you know. And it's like, what about just like right now? What does your body want to do? You want to go climb a tree? Cool, let's go do it. You know.
Yes, I love that.
Some like fun and play involved, and
trauma
doesn't have to be so like gloom and doom and grief and like yes, there's a place for that, and there's a ton of that. Certainly. But also, you know, joy and happiness can be a part of it too.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the part that you said about we're only as sick as our secrets, because I think that is where so much pain and shame hides, is with our secrets. And so I think that's kind of the whole thing behind what we're doing of trying to destigmatize trauma is let's stop having secrets. Like that's where, where like, so much pain lies.
Yeah. And that's kind of why you and I decided to do this first, is it's like, cool. Like we'll go first and talk about our shit. Right. Like, I don't have any, don't get me wrong, I still deal with shame, but I don't have any shame attached to sharing my story anymore. I know that we're all human through stuff, and I may be in different parts of processing or, you know, kind of triggered by different things.
Yeah.
But as a human, that's like what life is. We're going to go through different seasons of things, and some things may bother you more than others. And it's like, hey, let's just get honest about this stuff, and we'll go first, you know, we'll go first.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Love it. Well, another question for you. Did you always want to be or know that you wanted to be a somatic therapist?
So yes and no. When I was really little, and I'm talking like elementary, middle school, probably, I wanted to be a motivational speaker. Like, and I think from like my childhood trauma, I was like, I wanted to get better, but I didn't really know what that meant. So I wanted to like help other people, like, from like, and I mean, that's some like major codependency stuff too, but like, I always wanted to help people and, you know, help people heal from stuff. And then, as I got older, my mom became a massage therapist.
Okay.
And for my 18th birthday, she actually got me a massage with her instructor at Core Institute. And so when I had that massage, it literally changed my life. It was such a great massage. And what I remember from it, like, I don't remember the techniques. I don't remember what exactly she did, but I remember I didn't feel stressed when I got off the table. And I was like, I don't remember if it was an hour and a half, but I was like, this just changed my entire way of being. Wow. I have to do this. Like, this is a thing I have to do.
Yeah.
And so I went to massage school, like right out of high school. And I loved it, but I was like really scared to start practicing once I graduated, because I always like, and this is something that is true about me, like when I really respect something or really love it, it's like I don't feel like I'm good enough to like give it the respect it needs.
Yeah.
And so I did not massage for a year after getting licensed, because I was like, it's too sacred of a profession. I'm not going to screw it up. But also I had some like perfectionistic, like, you know, I was like, I have to be perfect before I start working.
Yeah.
I
don't know anything about that.
Yeah, no, nothing at all. And so it's really cool because, you know, fast forward all of these years, right? Like I'm almost 43, you know? And so this is when I was 18. So I've been working my entire adult life in this field. And so it's so like this field and being a somatic therapist has really seen me through like a lot of my stages as well. And as I've healed, I've watched the degree of healing in others when, you know, I could fully hold space, like as the years went on. It's just really, really cool to see, you know, that, you know, being able to be almost an observer of my own experience. And so now, you know, this business that we have, and as we're going into workshops and as we're going into, you know, speaking engagements and things like that, it's like this really cool combination of like what I always wanted to do. And
it's really cool.
It's just really cool because I feel lucky, and I know that this is not a lot of people's experience, but I'm truly like doing exactly what I want to be doing in my life. And it also took a hell of a lot of work to be able to create this for my life. Yeah. So, you know.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I also wanted to follow up with, because you talked about going to massage school and getting licensed as a massage therapist.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask a little bit more about the somatic piece. And because I know that you're also certified as a trauma touch therapist, but I know a lot of people don't really know what that is and what's the difference. So could you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I got licensed as a massage therapist back in 2000. So in the state of Florida, I'm licensed to touch and to do modalities for massage therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, I got to actually, you know, pick my specialties. So yeah. I was allowed to touch people. And for 10 years, I was trying to figure out what I really wanted to do, which is mm-hmm. when one of my clients who was an attorney, had been researching sexual assault plus body work and like intersection of those things. And trauma touch therapy came up in Lakewood, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver. Mm. And she said, Shay, have you heard of this? And literally as soon as she said it, I was like, no, but like, I went online to figure out what it was and literally signed up and flew up to Denver like the next month. Cause I was like, this is my thing, you know, because internally and viscerally, in myself, I know that the nervous system is the gatekeeper, right? Mm-hmm. Like with people who have had trauma, there's no way you're going to be able to access any of the muscles or like even like, you know, how people will just lock up. You've probably seen it in mm-hmm. you know, clients as they get triggered, they'll just completely lock up and then their body gets really hard and they dissociate and then they can't feel. So a lot of times people will be like, go deeper. And it's like, you actually need the complete opposite of that. So I really wanted to be able to help people beyond just the physical part of trauma. And so I would have all of these people on the tables that were having like emotional releases and I was to your therapist, but like, what more can I be doing? So when I found Trauma Touch and I went up there and did the workshop and the intensive, I'm like, this is it. Like I told Chris, the founder of Trauma Touch, she created the modality. I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. Like this is my thing. And essentially what it is trauma touch is for the body, to what mental health is for the mind, right? Mm. So it's being able to process all of these different things that happen to our bodies. Mm-hmm. And we maybe don't even remember them. So it can go back to in utero, it can go back to pre-verbal. Mm-hmm. And it's being able to process all of those stresses that have accumulated in our body over time. And I like to tell people what it is, you know, people who have done a lot of the cognitive processing and therapy. I get a lot of people who have been in therapy for a while, but they're like, I'm still stuck in my patterns. I can't seem to like get out of it. And it's really about being able to even notice with dissociation, as you know, we have a lot of clients who dissociate. They don't actually know like what their baseline is. And so being able to kind of help them feel like when that shift happens and be able to like hold the space for them to navigate it for themselves and for their bodies to tell whatever story needs to happen. Yeah. And so, so Trauma Touch is really about just processing those, like when your computer is open, you have all the tabs open, it's closing the tabs, you know, it's closing the tabs so the computer runs better. There's like a lot of metaphors because it's such a experiential you know, thing that you have to feel. But it's also, well, it's really like co-signing. If you co-sign a loan for somebody, like mind has already signed all of the paperwork, but body hasn't signed its piece yet. So it's really about being able to co-sign and body, you know, sometimes people will say, oh my God, this is like magic. It's going so fast. And I always put it back on them. And I'm like, because you've done the work, like this is not magic. It feels like magic because now it's embodied and now you're actually able to feel this kind of bloating head, you know, mm-hmm. where you're floating around and now it's connected to your body and you're not numb anymore. It feels like magic because now you're embodied, but man, you and your therapist and all of your team have done the work. And now it's just kind of connecting it all. Yeah. Now we're plugging in the light so you can see.
Yeah. So you've laid the foundation and now the house is built. Yeah.
Yeah. So trauma touches that. And then I also do craniosacral because the nervous system's my favorite system, because that's at the end of the day, I've had so much nervous system dysregulation in myself. Yeah. And I mean, this career I've chosen kind of chose me, but I come from a lifetime of trauma. And so this is the overcoming of it. So this is very personal to me. And I said, if I could get past all of my stuff, I want to help other people get out of it, because my A score was like a 9, you know, like I had a super high A score and super traumatic childhood. And I wanted to be able to get through it, but also like there were times where I didn't know if I was going to, but like what kept me going was like, I can be really, really helpful to people because I can like identify with what they've been through, but also from like a really boundary place, right?
Yeah.
It's not getting into their stuff and like, you know, enabling them. It's saying like, no, I totally identify, but this is yours to process. Like I'm here to hold space. Yes, I identify, but this is yours. And like, I'm just here to like encourage you along the way, make sure you're staying embodied. So it's just, I mean, I love coming to work. I love what I do because I get to see like actual miracles every day this very scientific, evidence-based, you know, that we practice. It's just really freaking cool.
I love it. Yeah.
I don't know if that answered your question.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
So here's another one, and talking about, you know, the it being magic versus not, but what is maybe like a common myth about your field that maybe you want to debunk today?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, and this is where I kind of say like our field, even though we have very distinct differences with talking, this is a body modality, but a lot of times it takes a little bit of talking in the beginning to just give context to what the person is processing. And they think like, well, I can't change my past. What's therapy really going to do? They've been locked inside this prison of trauma for however long. And so they get really kind of discouraged because they don't want to bring up the stuff that happened a long time ago because for whatever reason, either they don't want to face it or they don't think it'll actually help. But there's this really cool quote from Rezma Menakem. I love him. And it was in that book, My Grandmother's Hands, which I highly recommend to anybody.
So good. I'm actually listening to the audiobook right now and it's so good.
But I want to read his actual quote about trauma, because I think it's kind of perfect.
Yeah.
He said, trauma in a person decontextualized over time can look like personality. Trauma in a family decontextualized over time can look like family traits. Trauma in a people decontextualized over time can look like culture. And man, when I read that, I just got like chills, because how many times do we say, yep, that's just my family. That's just what they do. Or this is just my personality. And how much of it is trauma response? How much of it is trying to escape some sort of pain?
Yeah.
And so those things where, you know, people talk about like, well, talking about my past isn't going to change anything. Like, yeah, it's not going to change anything in the past, but all of those behavioral patterns that you think are personality or that you think are family traits or you think are cultural or whatever, maybe, but also maybe trauma, right? Like it may be able to shift if some like work is done, but it really takes the willingness to kind of go into the wilderness. And that is the part that's really scary. And that's the part that I tell people, I'm not going to ask you to go anywhere I haven't gone. Like for me to do this, there's no way I could hold space for people who've gone through any kind of trauma if I were not willing to also go through my own trauma. And mm-hmm. so it's from that place you're able to kind of say, I don't really know what's going to happen, but I can't live like this anymore. I don't choose to live like this anymore as like a walking zombie, or, you know, mm-hmm. this person that feels totally cut off or numbed from, you know, life or whatever. That's the part where the person just kind of has to be ready. And so I do think that, you know, there are some contexts where people, you know, don't want to talk about the past or don't yeah. want to, you know, like, well, this is never going to change. This is just mm-hmm. who I am. Or like, whether it be a diet, I think people can get locked in diagnoses. Somebody yeah. who's been diagnosed bipolar or ADHD. Mm-hmm. I think the label is important insofar as like processing whatever needs to happen yeah. within context, but it's not a life sentence, and it's mm-hmm. not a kind of way of boxing you in. It's a way right. of giving context to process these particular nuances mm-hmm. of the disorder or whatever. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so that's just kind of the way I see it. And with that framework of being able to, you know, just kind of open it up to be able to treat people as people instead of yeah. diagnoses, then that's where the healing can really take place, instead of thinking, well, I'm always going to be a little broken, so like, what's the point? Yeah. And it's like, mm-hmm. but what if you're not broken?
Yeah. When you're talking about that, it made me think of the movie Encanto.
Yeah.
And like the We Don't Talk About Bruno yeah. song, which is probably stuck in every person who has a child, at least head, indefinitely. True. But and as you were talking more, like the you know, the song with where she's doing all the flowers and everything. I don't know if anybody's seen the movie, that you know what I'm talking about, but and then also the song about the strong one, right? Like they were all kind of in their boxes and the roles until somebody started talking about the family drama. And then it was like, no, I can be somebody else. I can be yeah. different than I always thought I like had to be. And right. so, yeah, no, that was just the imagery that was coming to mind when you were that's talking so about cool. all of that. Yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's all about imagery, right? Like even right yeah. then, that's what it's about. The body brings up mm-hmm. this context for us to be able to kind of understand what's happening in our own bodies. So it yeah. is very visceral. It is, there mm-hmm. is imagery. And I mean, I yeah. get chills even talking about it because yeah. I love it because I know what healing feels like, you know, yes. it's like really, yes. you know,
powerful.
I wouldn't trade it for anything, even nope. you know, no matter how hard it is. It's like, I would never trade it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, speaking of hard, what would you say right now is the biggest challenge you're facing in your role with the business, and how are you tackling it?
Yeah. So obviously we're in our first year of business and it's super uh-huh. hard mm-hmm. because, you know, as you know, preaching to the choir here because you're my partner, but essentially it's working two full-time jobs and only getting paid for one mm-hmm. and everything that goes in that. But what I'm grateful for is I know what my priorities are. I started this business because it had to happen. So it was a choice. It wasn't like a, well, maybe we'll just like try this and see how it goes. It's like, this is like my life goal, you know, like mm-hmm. I'm literally living my dream.
Yeah.
And dreams are fucking hard, you know, like if you want to live your dream, like there's a lot of hard work that goes with yeah. that. And so what's helpful is being able to have that context of, I chose this and mm-hmm. yes, and I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing. So it's being able to navigate work with like my own family life, with my friends, and kind of putting the shoulds. I mean, and this is a constant like trouble for me. I don't know what the word is, but like I struggle mm-hmm. with like, I should be doing this or I yeah. should have done this. And being able to kind of neutralize that in the moment, like when mm-hmm. I catch myself doing it and say like, him and I are doing a really big thing right now. Like sometimes things just don't happen, you know, like yeah. sometimes things just have to be pushed off till like the next day or the next week, mm-hmm. or whatever. and being able to navigate that, but like, honestly, you know, and being able to put it into, we're in the first year of business. It is hard. It is okay that it feels hard. And it's worth it. And so so being able to have the agency and autonomy over my decisions and not like have that stance of life is happening to me and, oh my God, what am I going to do? It's like, no, like this is super intentional. I worked really, really hard to be able to get to the place where I could open a trauma like business with you, you know, this was absolutely intentional. Yeah. And I sign up for all of it, you know, like all of the things that go with it, all of the, you know, kind of like having a baby, all that's, you know, when you want to have a baby, like all those nights that you don't sleep and all of the stress that comes with it. It's like, but you wanted a baby. Like, so feel about
you're not going to sleep for a while.
It's not going to sleep for a while. Yeah. And, you know, just, I know that it's a priority and I know that I love it, and that's kind of what keeps going and the clients and like all of the good things that we get to do, like in this world where it feels very, you know, wherever you are politically, I don't care where you are politically, nobody's happy. Right. And so in this place where nobody can really agree on anything, we get to be the safe haven to help people process wherever they are and do like a little bit of good in the corner of the world that we're able to do the good in. Like, that's freaking awesome. Like being able to be a place where people come to heal from whatever trauma they're going through, whoever they are. So,
I love that. Love that. And babies do eventually start sleeping through the night. So eventually our business baby will start sleeping through the night.
I like it.
One day. Awesome. Well, this is a fun one. So if you won $10 million tomorrow, what would you spend it on?
Taylor and I talk about this all the time. So this is a fun question for me. And it's fun because I know I keep going back to like doing the actual like hard work of healing trauma. But like, I would immediately call, I feel like such a boring adult sometimes. Like, so I would call my financial advisor, Robin Gordon, plug for her wealth. I would call Robin and be like, girl, what am I going to do here? You know, and get her to kind of help me figure all of that out. But like truly, because I know my priorities, like I know I would buy us a bigger building because we already need a bigger building because we're outgrowing it. I would really want to set up some sort of fund for a pay it forward for clients who can't afford it. The way that I was able to heal when I got sober, because when I got sober is when I was able to start dealing with my trauma. I personally could not process my trauma until I got sober because I am an alcoholic and I had to quit drinking and using drugs. And so I was able to go on a grant for sexual abuse victims. And so I didn't have to pay for my therapy in like the first year. And I always like, and I had the best therapist. Oh my God, I love her so much. And I always said, like, I want to pay it forward. So I want to set up a pay it forward for clients who really want to do the work, but just aren't in the financial place to be able to do that kind of work. That was done for me. And I really want to be able to do that for others. So if we won the $10, I'd be able to like fund that, you know, much as I could, obviously. And like, I don't have huge, like, I like nice things, don't get me wrong, but I'm not like, I'm not super materialistic. Like I would get, you know, Taylor and I a house, you know, so Ollie could have his wing for him and his teens, you know, would get like a house that's kind of big enough for us. And I would get a car, like I would get a new car because I've been, you know, like mine's getting kind of old. I would like make sure Ollie could go to college, you know, so it's set up a fund for college. And then like Taylor and I would just travel, you know, because we both really want to travel. There's places we want to go. And then just have the investment set up to where I'd live off, you know, a certain amount. So we wouldn't have to worry about bills because like, let's be honest, like worrying about finances, you know, people have to worry about, can I go to the dentist this month? Cause I don't think I can afford a crown. Like that would be so much of like a weight off to not worry about like how you're going to pay for certain things, but just like comfortably, but like save, but not save to the point where I'm stingy. I want to share too. So it's like this whole balance of being able to save. So I'm being like, you know, whatever, like save because it's important, but also like help people. Like if I had $10 million, like I don't need all that right now. Like if I'm smart about the investment, I can like help people in the process. So that's what I do.
That's awesome. Love it. Yeah. Well, I hope that happens for you because that would be great for the world too. Yeah.
And we need a building.
Yeah, we do. It's true. Okay, so this is another fun one. At least I think it's fun. What's an insult that you've received that you're actually proud of?
So the one I'm most proud of, anybody who's been through trauma in like a any kind of relational way, I think will understand this. But people that don't think you're ever going to make it, I gotta like, you're never going to make it without my help. And that's when that phrase for me is like a watch me.
Yeah.
It's like, I needed that little bit of spite, to be honest. Like I needed a little bit of like, I need to be able to do this to like prove that I can. And I remember like, even in eighth grade, I had, a piano teacher because I played piano like through elementary and middle school, and I quit in eighth grade because, you know, I was because I finally could have a decision and I was like, screw it, I'm not playing piano anymore. Even though I totally wish I would have kept going, but anyway, I picked out this piece of music for my recital in eighth grade, and my piano teacher was like, that's a little too advanced for you, I don't think you can do that one. I was like, I'm doing this. And I did, I played it flawlessly because I was like, I like a challenge. I guess I just like a challenge, even though I'm not really a competitive person.
Yeah.
Challenges with myself, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not like a sporty person. Like I don't play sports and compete against other people. I think I'm constantly like just trying to like beat my own records and like what I think I can do. And so, so that insult was like, you're never going to make it, you know, without my help was like, yes, I will. Like I totally will.
Yeah.
And so that was one that really kind of did the opposite of what the person was intending. So
I love that. Love that.
Yeah.
Well, this one's kind of along the same lines a little bit, but a little bit different. So if your worst enemy wrote a book about you, what would the title of that book be?
Yeah. And this is one. So, you know, I got sober. I haven't had alcohol in 13 years. So this was like a while ago. I lost a lot of friends in the process, obviously. And I've really hurt one of my friends. So when I was trying to do amends, which is in AA, you go back and try to make amends with people that you've harmed. She like basically was like, you're dead to me. I don't ever want to talk to you anymore. So the title of my book would be like, if she were to write it, she would say, she says she's changed, but I don't believe her.
And so I gotcha.
That is like where that's how much people can change. Right. Like, and but like, I respect the impact I had on her at a time in my life where I was in active addiction and I'm not going to take that away. And so she doesn't want to talk to me anymore. And so I completely, understand that and respect that. So the best thing I can do is to honor her wishes. Right. So even though I've changed like, and done a complete 180 in the past, you know, decade, that doesn't take away the impact of how I hurt her, you know, how I hurt her feelings back then. And so, so that's, you know, that's like kind of the humility too, that comes with like trauma healing is really realizing that when we're hurt, we hurt people.
Yeah.
And I hurt people when I was not well. And that's just a part of healing and a part of being human.
So last one for today. What would you say in your career over all these years, what has been the most important lesson that you've learned?
Do your own work so you don't project your shit on others. For sure. For sure. Yeah. Number one. But also don't take things so seriously. And I can say that now after processing a lot of stuff Like, mm-hmm. when I got sober and when I started trauma healing and like processing, you know, incest and sexual assault and all the things that happened to me in my childhood, mm-hmm. I had to get real serious, you know? So yeah. it was, I had trauma from like zero to like 18. So like developmental trauma, right? So mm-hmm. zero to 18 is trauma. And then I went into active addiction. So then I was perpetuating like some of my own trauma cycles. So mm-hmm. I started using drugs and alcohol. And so then I started hurting myself and like hurting others with my actions. Yeah. And so, you know, active addiction was traumatic, right? But it was, I was using it so I could like heal the wounds from like childhood. And so it's just interesting how it's just like, when you look back, you see like how you were trying to do the right thing, but mm-hmm. like not in the right way. So, you know, right. being able to process all of that stuff, like when I got sober, it was kind of like ripping off the Band-Aid and having mm-hmm. no anesthetic, right? Like I drank so I didn't have to feel the pain of yeah. like a lifetime of trauma, right? But yeah. then drinking was killing me and I had to make a choice of like, mm-hmm. do I want to live or do I want to die? And like, mm-hmm. as an alcoholic, that's like an actual question. Like, that's how I'm right. saying, like, do I want to live or do I want to die? Is that really a choice? Yeah, it is for people mm-hmm. who are mm-hmm. like in active addiction and have severe trauma. Like,
right.
and it was like 51-49 and like, all you need is 51%. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm ready to process this stuff. So
yeah,
so the first couple of years of sobriety and trauma recovery was like so serious. I took myself yeah. so seriously, but I felt like I needed that. Like yeah. I'm not even really judging myself for it now, because I feel like I had so much like fun in my like active addiction mm-hmm. years and stuff mm-hmm. like that, that it was like, okay, time to get serious, you know,
yeah.
and like study the book of life, whatever. Right. That, I don't know what that means, but yeah. I was just like,
where do we find that?
I now have to be serious, be like really, really studious right. or whatever. And so from there is when, you know, when I started really doing kind of this work and trauma mm-hmm. touch and therapy and just all of the things, you know, getting into, I don't know, just at some point I quit taking myself so seriously. And, yeah. and that has been really helpful to be able to laugh at myself. I think that's yeah. the point where I'm just like, there's my pattern again.
Right.
Because I know I'm not laughing it off as like, here's a really fucked up thing about myself that hurts people that I'm not going to change. I'm not laughing right. about it like that. I'm laughing about it like, and then I'll like apologize. Like if mm-hmm. I'm grumpy and I snapped mm-hmm. at Taylor, if I snapped at my partner, mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I just snapped at you about that. Like, I am really triggered by this other thing, but like, I'm yeah. really sorry. And being able to mm-hmm. like catch that stuff in real time. So it's yeah. just like being able to like admit when I'm wrong, but also be like, oh God, I did mm-hmm. it again. Like yep. I'm human. And dude, sometimes I hate that.
Yeah.
And, yep. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's really hard to just accept the fact that I'm a human. Mm-hmm. And I think that is like one of my meditations of just, can it just be enough that I can sit here and breathe and like pet my cat and look out the window and like watch the trees, you know, can I just exist as a human right now mm-hmm. instead of thinking I'm this like superhuman that has to do all these things and be everything to everyone. And that's just, you know, with codependency and with like enmeshed relationships and with that kind mm-hmm. of stuff, it's just been practice and practicing yeah. not, you know,
mm-hmm.
not being able to do it perfectly.
Right.
So, yeah. Not taking myself seriously, but also doing the necessary work. And as a byproduct with clients, you know, at the end of the day, like we know all the techniques and we've done all the trainings and we've done all the things, but at the end of the day, it's about being able to sit and be present and listen and connect with another human being, mm-hmm. just sitting with another person and me being able to just sit there with them in their silence and their sadness and their joy, however they show up, being mm-hmm. able to deal with my own shit so I don't come into the room with my stuff.
Right.
I, you know, am able to sit there with another person, make myself neutral, and they can come with their stuff and feel safe to do that. So mm-hmm. So that's kind of like personally, but also like you asked about career, like it's they're connected.
Yeah.
Like I can't say that my profession isn't personal, because if I didn't personally do the work, I would not be the practitioner that I am professionally.
Yeah.
If I didn't do my personal work. So they're intimately connected. Absolutely. My personal life very much informs my professional life. Mm-hmm. And the healthier I get, I think the better therapist I am.
Same. Yeah. I absolutely agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing. Is there anything else that you want to add, or anything else that you feel like you, maybe I didn't ask that you wanted me to?
No, I think we talked about a lot of stuff. I think, you know, I'm just happy to be able to destigmatize trauma. I think that that's the biggest thing that we want to do in our business. And so being able to open up the conversation and be able to kind of give people the space to be able to listen to this and maybe identify a little bit, and then be able to have words where it feels wordless a lot of time. I know for me, at least, a lot of times I would hear people talk and I'd be like, oh my God, that's it. You just put words to a thing I've never been able to put words to. I'm hoping that this podcast and the people that we talk to, that people will be able to identify this wordless prison that happens with trauma and be able to heal from just hearing people share what their actual stories with trauma is, and like what it looks like symptomatically in their bodies, and what healing from it looks like.
Yeah.
And also break down, healing does not always mean like unicorns and rainbows. Sometimes it is really, really, you know, the well of grief opens up and that happens too. And it's all just part of it, you know, taking off that filter so the numbness doesn't exist, and being able to deal with things in real time is, you know, what is healthy for me, what I have found in my journey personally and professionally.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you everyone for listening.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye. 'Cause I've got trauma, but so does everyone else. Is it karma?